Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will begin a new teaching series in the book of Judges with The Rule of the Judges. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thank you much, Bob. Today we are starting a study of the Book of Judges in the Old Testament. And this is the seventh book of the Bible. Now, in the Book of Judges, in this book, we have what is really a brief record of the early history of the land of Israel. And by early history, I mean the first centuries of Israel's history in the land. In this book, we see the leaders God chose were called judges. And these judges ruled under Jehovah himself, who was the king. And through the lives and the work of these judges, we can learn about God's works and ways. Now, I say the history of Judges records the early history of the land of Israel. Well, the historical period of Judges covers well over 300 years of Israel's history. Now, Israel was in the land of Israel between the conquest of the land in the book of Joshua and the captivity at the end of the book of Kings, around 1,000 years. So when I say Judges is in the early history, well, that's the context. In about 1,000 years, Judges is maybe the first third of that 1,000. Now, consider that our own country, the United States, our history is less than 300 years, and we are just over 240 years. It's the age of our country. And realize that the early history of Israel is a long time. It's a long time that's covered in the book of Judges. So in just 21 chapters, we're going to cover around a third of Israel's history. Well, we are obviously getting it largely in outline and not in detail. Now, when I say it is longer than the history of our nation, of course, I'm just speaking since we became a nation. And really, to consider the history of the United States, you really should go back to the early colonies. And if you go back to some of the first settlers, like the Pilgrims and so forth, well, there you're well over 400 years of history in the United States. But I mean, as a nation, at least, and Israel was a nation from the time they conquered the land. But we as a nation only go back less than 250 years. So consider that this is a long time we're covering in this short book of Judges. Now, what were judges? Well, the judges in Israel were leaders. What kind of leaders were they? We understand that judges were not kings. No, when it came to Israel, God was Israel's true king. And he proves this from the very beginning when in Exodus, he sends Moses and Aaron and he says to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And he claims them as his people. Now, why were Israel his people? Well, that goes back long before Moses to the covenant he had made with the man Abraham. Remember, there was this man Abraham was just a citizen of Ur of the Chaldees. And yet God called him out of that land and called him to go to the land of Canaan that he said he was going to give him and said that he was going to make a nation of him. So understand that Israel, and this is true of most nations, in fact, all nations after the flood, is that nations were originally families. And as those families grew and got bigger and bigger and started to intermarry, and they became nations. And that's what Israel was. It was a family that grew into a nation. Now, today we have this silly Darwinian idea that there's a Jewish race that's somehow different from other peoples. But the Bible never considers a race other than the human race, the race of Adam. And the nations are just families that grew into nations. And the same thing's true of Israel. except they were God's nation, his chosen nation. And they were his nation from Abraham, but Abraham's family grew into the nation of Israel, and then the fact that they were his nation was furthered by the covenant he made with them at Mount Sinai. And when he made that covenant and they agreed to it, well, he was their king from then on. So God was the king, and so therefore judges were not kings. So what were judges? Well, we have judges in our system of government. And we know that we generally think of judges sitting over a courtroom. But understand that we, in our government, we have three branches of government. We have the legislative branch, and they are the ones who write the laws. That is like our Congress, our House of Representatives, or our Senate. Then we have the executive branch. They are the ones who enforce the laws, and they are like the president or the governors, and all the way down to people like the police force and so forth. These enforce the laws. And then we have the judicial branch. And that's where the judges and the lawyers come in. Well, the judges, the judicial branch, they interpret the laws. And that's why they have courtrooms and trials and so forth, for the judge to interpret the law and to apply it to specific and real situations. Because, of course, laws mostly speak to the theoretical, and you have to bring them down and apply them to the real. However, that is not what a judge was in Israel. When we come to the book of Judges, we're not coming to the book of people who sit over courtrooms and do trials. No, the judges were the human representatives of God, Israel's king. And they were kind of like his prime minister. And the judges, as God's representative on earth, could do any one of the three functions of government. They could announce the laws as God gave them to them. They could enforce the laws. And they would also be the interpreters of the laws. And so they were not like our courtroom judges. They were much more like kings, only they were the representative of God, Jehovah, Israel's true king. Now, the judges, I say, were like kings, except that they were very informal leaders. They didn't have a large cabinet. They didn't have a big centralized government that they were over. And Israel, during the time of the judges, was mostly a loose collection of tribes. And we could compare, in this aspect anyway, we could compare the early history of Israel to the early history of our own nation, both in the early colonies and then in the early United States. And that is that in the early history of our nation, we were the United States of America. And that was not just a name, it expressed the reality of what we were. That we were really states. Not so much a giant nation, but we were individual states. And the real power was there in the states. Now we had, at first, under the colonies, there was a centralized government. Well, that was in England, way over on the island of Britain. But that was far away, and the colonies, naturally, mostly, governed themselves. Just had a few edicts come down from on high from the centralized government far away. Then when we formed our own government, the United States of America, with our own national government, well, that national government was largely just to deal with external affairs. They were to deal with the state's interaction with other nations. And especially at times, for example, of war, the national government would oversee the war. And then when it came to interstate commerce, one state interacting with another, the national government would try to set the ground rules, see to it that one state didn't take advantage of another state or rip off another state in some way. But they were largely a weak overseer of the states. The states could largely run their own affairs. And the national government can only get involved when the states are interacting with each other. Now that is much how Israel was. Not exactly, of course, but there were a lot of similarities. And that is that Israel, from the time that the conquest of the land was over and they all settled down in their tribal lands, the tribal lands were a lot like our states, well, the main government and most governing that was going on was at the tribal level. There was very little government at the national level. And in fact, even more important perhaps than the tribal government was their own local and city governments. And I would say that most of the power in the land was actually in the small governments of the cities, which of course meant it was very, very close to the people. Your leader was actually somebody who lived in your community. You could go and talk to him. Good luck in our nation going and talking to the president. And there are millions of people who'd like to do it too. Fat chance you'll get an appointment if you try to make one. But no, your governors were your city governors. Very close to you, you could talk to them. And that was where most of the power was. So each city was much more like its own little city-state governing its own affairs than it was like part of a big national government. Now, of course, if a couple of cities had a dispute, they might appeal to the tribal government. And then all the cities would send their representatives to a tribal council that might decide the dispute between the cities. But that would be a higher form of government, but it would meet much less frequently. It would probably seldom be that the tribal government would meet. And as far as any national government getting together, that was largely only in the case of war or of some national disturbance. That the tribes would actually not just go to tribal council, but actually get together in a national convocation to deal with national problems like foreign invasion. So therefore, there was very little in the way of national government. Most of your government was local, and therefore, that provided really the maximum freedom, the maximum individuality. Having most of the government that affected you on a day-to-day basis be right there local to you. Now, the judge was the national ruler, yes. But he was mainly there to represent the Lord. And yet most actual government business took place on a local basis. That was what was going on day to day. Now, when a war would happen, the judge would largely be in charge of getting together the army. That was when he really acted on a national level, is that he would be over the army. He would gather the army. He would call the tribes to come together into the army and to enter into war with this foreign power, this foreign invader. Once the war was over, the tribes would disperse back to their own territories, and the judge then would go back to his local territory and have very little to do with the national government, except that he would speak the word of the Lord. If the Lord would have any word for the whole nation, the judge could send it out to the nation. But the judge, therefore, was much like a prophet, what would later be called the prophets in the later days of the nation. Only the prophets just spoke God's words, whereas the judge had some connection with the government and with the army that the prophets typically didn't have. But a judge was a lot like a prophet. Now, when the nation was not getting together in a time of war or national crisis, the actual influence of the judge on a day-to-day basis was much stronger on a local level than a national one. He probably was the head of the government in his own city. For a judge like Samuel, he went around to three different cities and judged in each one. Well, his strongest influence was probably over those three cities, and of course the cities around them. And especially to his own tribe. The judge would be the most important figure in his own tribe. But as far as the other tribes, he might have very little influence unless it was a time of national crisis. So on a day-to-day basis, he's probably having much more to do with the government of his local tribe and his local city than he was of any national government. And only when a time of crisis came would his influence expand. Well, this again is much like our early colonies. They, like I said, largely ran themselves. Their central government was Britain. It was far away over the sea. And most of what they decided within their own colony. And they largely ran themselves, and that gave them a lot of freedom, maximum freedom, because their government was all at a local level. So that's what the judges were, and we must understand that as you study through the book of Judges. And we'll see a lot of the time when the judges shine and really do something important is at times of war and national crisis. Otherwise, they're just judging Israel, running things, and it's even then largely on a tribal or a local basis. Now, through these judges, we can learn something of the works and ways of God. And so I think it's very valuable for us to study this book of Judges. Now, let's look at the book and at its place and author. Well, our Old Testament, when we divide it, when we divide our Old Testament, we divide it into four sections. We divide it into the law, the history section, the writings, and then the prophets at the end. But that's not how the Hebrew Bible was actually divided up. Now, in modern Hebrew Bibles, they have often reordered them and scrambled them around according to the Gentile way of doing it. But the original Hebrew Bible was set up differently. There was no history section. And the books were in a different order than we have them in our, like I said, Gentile scrambled Old Testament. They had three sections were the law, the five books of Moses, just like in our Bibles, the prophets, which included some books we wouldn't call prophets, and then the writings, or they'd sometimes call them the Psalms, because the book of Psalms started that section. And the history books were divided between the judges and the writings. And even some of what we call the prophets were divided between the prophets and the writings. Now, in the Hebrew Bible, the judges was among the section called the prophets. That section was Joshua, Judges, Samuel combined as one book, Kings combined as one book, then Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and then the minor prophets combined as one book. So those eight books made up the section called the prophets, and the Judges was the second of those books. So now let's look at the book of Judges, and we'll start in Judges, of course, chapter 1 and verse 1. It says, now, after the death of Joshua, notice it starts with now. But if we'd actually look at the Hebrew, as E.W. Bullinger points out in his Companion Bible, that word that's translated now is actually the word and in Hebrew. And since this book starts with the word and, that connects this book back to the book before it, or the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua and the book of Judges are connected by this and. Now, if we would look at the book of Joshua and go back to the first verse of Joshua, we would see that Joshua also starts with and, which, of course, connects Joshua back to the book of Deuteronomy. So while we usually think of the first five books of the Old Testament as being connected, and then we move to a new section, in the Hebrew Bible, it makes it clear that these first seven books are all connected together. And they are recording a continuous history and a continuous record of God's works. So this book of Judges really takes up where the book of Joshua left off. And it's continuing the record of the Word of God. Now, in spite of the fact that Joshua and Judges are connected, of course, they do not have the same author. Now, we know that much of the first five books had the author Moses. Yet, starting perhaps with Deuteronomy, there must be another author than Moses. Of course, since Moses died in the book of Deuteronomy, we would sincerely doubt that Moses wrote all of Deuteronomy. I mean, that would be kind of macabre, wouldn't it, if the Lord told some prophet, okay, I'm going to inspire you to write about your own death before it happens. It seems pretty unlikely to me. I mean, the Lord could do that, of course. But I don't think he would. Talk about a mean thing to make a prophet do. So probably the book of Deuteronomy was finished by somebody else. And the best guess, of course, would be Joshua. Finished the book of Deuteronomy after Moses' death. And since Joshua's death is recorded in Joshua, it would appear that he didn't finish his own book. Some other prophet took it up and finished it. And I think this is true of many of these that we call history books in the Bible. Many of them cover hundreds of years. In the case of Genesis, thousands of years. And so I think it's pretty obvious they don't have just one author. That one prophet will write part of the book, and then he'll pass it off to the next prophet, who will continue it, and then he'll pass it off to the next prophet until it's done. So it's passed from one writer to the next. Although the main writer, the overall author, of course, is God himself, writing through the prophets. And I think, like I said, this is even true of Genesis. We call that a book of Moses, and I think, yes, Moses compiled and completed Genesis, but that he probably compiled the earlier sections from other writings of previous prophets, and he probably just wrote the record of Joseph bringing Israel up to Egypt. But a lot of the earlier sections were written by other prophets, and he just compiled them and finished the book. So that brings us to the book of Judges. Who wrote Judges? Well, not Joshua, certainly. His death is mentioned right way here in verse 1. The narrative is ongoing, and like I said, it covers well over 300 years of history. So it probably was written by multiple prophets. And yet there probably was a final prophet who put it all together. Well, what's our best guess as to who that final prophet might have been? Well, I think our best guess would be Samuel. Of course, it's a guess. We don't know. Now, we know Samuel started the book of Samuel, which is credited with his name. And yet, if we would look into it, we would find that Samuel only wrote part of Samuel because, again, he dies in Samuel. It's very unlikely that he was recording history that took place after his death. And in fact, if we turn to 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 29, we'd find out who the authors of the book of Samuel were. Where it says, "Now the acts of King David, first and last, indeed they are written in the book of Samuel the seer, and in the book of Nathan the prophet, and in the book of Gad the seer." So there we have it. The book, or the two books we have called 1 and 2 Samuel, were actually started by Samuel, but then it was passed off from him to Nathan the prophet, and then it was passed off from him to Gad the seer. So our book of Samuel actually had three authors, Nathan, Gad, and Samuel. And so I think Samuel probably was the last author of the book of Judges. Of course, who the first authors were, we don't know. We don't have a nice convenient verse like 1 Chronicles 29:29 to tell us. It's also interesting to consider that as long as there were prophets in Israel, God could have them edit books, previous books. For example, consider then what it says things like, "Things continue to this day," in some of these books in the Old Testament. Well, what day was that? Well, it could be the day of the original author, but it could be a later prophet who adds that as a note. Well, as long as he's a prophet, he has the Lord's inspiration, he can do that. And that could be very convenient. I mean, we have problems with some of our older versions of the Bible. Some of the words get antiquated or change in meaning or aren't used anymore. And we just have to come up with a word that we think is better, a modern word. But as long as you had inspired prophets, the Lord could say to the prophet, "Nobody uses that word anymore. Let's change it out for this word." And of course, it's still as much as the word of the Lord after the change as it was before. And as long as you had inspired prophets, you could do that. Of course, you can't do it today to the Hebrew and Greek because those are finalized. We have to just do it with our English translations if necessary. So who wrote Judges? I don't know. I think Samuel finished it, compiled it and finished it. Who wrote it before him, I don't know. So that brings us up to the early verses, where it says again in verse 1, "Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, 'Who shall be first to go up for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?'" Well, here we have the situation where Joshua has died, and the leadership of Israel was continuous from Moses. Moses had been the leader, leading them out of Egypt and through the wilderness. Then it passed off smoothly to Joshua. Joshua had been the leader. But now Joshua was dead, and no successor to Joshua had been chosen. And so now the question is, who is the new leader going to be? And they need to figure that out. So we see that the book of Judges is a book of these judges who were rulers under God. They represented God, and they did his work over Israel as informal rulers over the nation. From this early period of Israel's history, we learn about God and his works and ways with his people. How Israel was set up when it was set up the way he wanted it, not the way they demanded it. Well, let's continue, and as we study through this book, let's see what we can learn about God from this historical book of Judges.
Judges. Moses and Joshua had led Israel out of bondage and to the land of promise. After wandering for 40 years because of their sin, Israel has finally entered into the land of Canaan. And now we learn about the time between Joshua and the kings in Israel, when the Lord appoints judges to rule in Israel. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the rule of the judges. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of Judges with the conquest of Canaan. Thank you for joining us today. We trust that you are learning that the more you study God's Word, the more you can know God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also send out a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on this mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now. But as always, we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.